This is the Disability Visibility Podcast with your host, Alice Wong.
Hey. My name is Alice Wong, and I'm the host of the Disability Visibility Podcast. Talk conversations on disability politics, talk culture, and media. One of my favorite TV shows is Orphan Black on BBC America. This show starts off as a mystery where the main character, Sarah, played by Tatiana Maslany, discovers she's actually a clone, and there are hundreds of people in the world who look like her. There's a lot in this show that clicked with me as a disabled person, as Sarah and her sister clones, also known as Sestras, fight for control over their bodies and their right to exist. When Orphan Black ended its fifth and final season in August 2017, I had a chance to talk with two friends of mine who are also diehard fans of the show, Rebecca Coakley and Bailey Johnson. We discussed the power of disabled women, eugenics, body autonomy, and disability representation in Orphan Black. Please note that in addition to these larger themes, we'll mention characters and plot points throughout all the seasons and what happened in the finale, so be warned for spoilers. Are you ready? Away we go!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Thank you, Becca and Bailey, some of my most favorite sisters of the world, for joining me on a conversation about Orphan Black and disability.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Coakley. I am super nerdy. I'm a mom of two hopeful nerds. And I'm thrilled to be here because I think finding sci-fi fantasy shows and media that are specifically female-centered are few and far between. And I'm a huge Orphan Black addict.
Yep, so am I.
Hi, I'm Bailey Thompson. Both Austin and Rebecca are two of my favorite big sisters. I just respect you two and look up to you both so much.
How would you explain Orphan Black to someone who's never seen it before?
I forget what somebody said about it. They're like, it's a great show about women and the men take their shirts off a lot. A lot of men in the media said, it's a really interesting show, but the men are just there for window dressing. The men are just there to move the plot along. And I thought that was genius because I was like, yes, that is actually
true. Like my mom, she was so shocked that they did not bring Cal back for the last season. At the same time, I was like, the genius behind people who were so deep into writing independent female characters that they were like, she don't need him. Like she don't need him to come back to finish the story. Orphan Black is definitely been one of my favorite shows for the last 5 years. As someone who is a huge TV nerd specifically, I love seeing the artistry behind two writers who are like, we wrote a 5-season story and we got to the end of chapter 5 and that is the end of the story and that is why we're ending it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Bailey. Their storytelling, you know, fall into the trap that, you know, so many, you know, well-known shows do. But they just keep milking it.
They sort of flirted even with it, even with the last episode, with the fact that we know that there are clones all over the world. When you stop and you think about, like, Tatiana Maslany is holding down how many characters, it also feels very intimate. I think it's impossible to watch the show and not feel like you're part of that family. You're part of that unit.
I remember moments or seasons where the characters were so spread out. You felt like you knew they had to come back together because there's that connection between them all being sort of the same person, at least at the root and core of who they were created to be. That also is reflected in the disability community. And the thing I first love about the disability community is something you don't commonly find in the able community, which is the ability to disappear and then come back. We need to be back eventually. That connection can't be destroyed just because you're too sick to be around for a little bit. And everyone's still like, we knew you were coming back. We left your seat right here. it's fine.
There's another concept that's just, you know, so beautiful. And that's the, you know, the term that came out of the show, called sisters. And sisterhood.
Sisterhood is the bond that you tend to form with the people closest to you in your life. Often for women, those are female or femme bonds. But sometimes they're male or trans. And these people bring out the best out of you, and your sistras, they see the best in you. And they demand the best from you at the same time that they forgive you when you fall short. They're your friends and your family by choice. And they make you better just by being your sistras.
To me, sisterhood really is about having a core group of folks, as Melisa said, that like you don't have to explain yourself because they know. Having a crew of women that understand the importance of nurturing each other, loving each other unconditionally and supporting each other and holding each other accountable in a way that centers you. I don't know about y'all, but I've noticed like the patriarchy does not know what to do with women that support each other.
Yeah, I think they're scared almost of women and femme people who are that supportive of each other, who aren't having constant battles amongst themselves. They're just like, I'm just so happy that you're able to be here. I'm just so happy that you're able to do what you're doing.
Well, I do also think that was great that they showed masculinity, male characters, in a really nurturing way. And I think the men are there to support the sisters, but they're not there to save them. That's a really wonderful, kind of really refreshing way to plot these male characters within a show.
You know, watching Felix be able to engage with Rachel. And he knows exactly who she is. He knows her for every part of who she is.
And I like that they use Felix for that, because people don't understand how when you grow up feeling like you're a homosexual in a time where it's not acceptable, you develop self-hate. And you understand what hating yourself is. And that's why he understood her. Like, I know you don't love yourself. I know you hate yourself. And this, seeing your disability actually on the outside, is making you hate yourself more than ever.
Yeah. One of the things that really struck me as interesting was hearing about the other clones' families. Like, we've had so many conversations in our house about Cosima and Cosima's parents. Like, and the fact that Cosima has locks. They're always specifically vague about the ethnicity of her adopted parents. Has she been raised culturally biracial? Or is she a white chick with dreadlocks? Just unapologetically a white chick from the University of Minnesota with locks. And what does that mean? But that answer is also never given to us.
I'm the type of Black person who, when a person has locks, I might have questions. But I feel like I actually treat it the way you treat religion, where I'm like, let me see how you handle this in your day-to-day life. And that's what I'll make my decision based off of.
Well, and speaking of, you know, parental figures, let's talk about Rachel, because Rachel's had a really effed up, you know, upbringing. I mean, her parents, you know, created her. They were scientists.
Rachel and Helena are two different expressions or examples of what it is like to be raised in a way that turns you into a sociopath. And you still have the potential to become a good or bad sociopath. So Helena, despite being in a much worse situation, they needed her to be a sociopath just as much as the Aleutian needed Rachel to be a sociopath, but they weren't going about it in a more logical sense. They were like, this is emotional sense. This is just the belief that's supposed to guide you into sociopathy. Helena was still more easily able to decide to make choices to be a good sociopath. It's a disability like any other disability that you have to decide how you handle it. But lots of people, no matter the conditions they were raised in, still decide to be good sociopaths who will only tap into that sociopathic part of their personality when it's to defend people they love, like Helena did.
People ran from Rachel. Her dad killed himself versus watch her plan unfold. Whereas people were always trying to chase Helena to get to her.
For Rachel, she was supposed to be a capitalist, objective scientist. And that is it. The reason why she felt like I've done everything right was because she was the sociopathic scientist that would do anything.
And I thought the relationship between Rachel and Kira, season 5, Rachel, she scared the shit out of me, you know.
If you think about it, in season 1, Helena immediately connected to Kira, but then she got closer and closer to Sarah.
We know that Rachel really wanted to be a mother. I think that's like the first thing she talks about, like when they talk about Sarah having a child.
Yeah, and I did think it was interesting in the last episode where Sarah's fighting with Moreland. It was Moreland calls her a fertile freak. Well, he really uses that against her, even though that's what he's been looking for, and that's what he's been working towards his entire life.
I also thought the Westmoreland scene, that like final battle, was really interesting. And Patrick and I were talking about Frankenstein and the idea of the monster coming home to the castle and the final battle between like creature and creator. And that that's the only way it really could have ended.
That was their only way to be free. And their freedom was that man's life.
Orphan Black also deals with a lot of these bigger issues that really, you know, resonate with me as a disabled person in terms of course, these ideas of eugenics, surveillance, forced treatment, clearly bodily autonomy, and reproductive justice, and this, you know, this quest for cure and perfection. What are some ways the show clicked with you as, you know, disabled women in terms of all of these kind of, like, huger, larger issues about this idea of quote-unquote perfection and this idea of the evolution of humans?
I do remember even as a kid being at Hopkins, you know, which is a teaching hospital, and having, like, the residents come in and poke me every time it seemed like I was, like, in the middle of a book or eating food or going to sleep.
You know they need their education, but you're like, educate yourself somewhere else, loser.
Oh, totally. And I remember like as a kid throwing Jell-O at them and my mom being like completely horrified. I just want to eat. We flew in yesterday. I really related to those moments where, you know, they were sick of being experimented on or even having the realization that this was yet another experiment for the good of Dyad. You know, it wasn't about curing them, it was about making money. That to me was triggering and refreshing at the same time, because it's like, how often do you actually see that?
I mean, it's really blatant in terms of, you know, this idea of intellectual property and, you know, humans being intellectual property. And I think that's, you know, that's very real.
I started thinking more deeply about the casters and how the way the casters were used symbolically as how male sex can be used violently, like whole cultures and societies. I thought like they really took that to the next level and were like, what if we just made sex from men the ultimate weapon? That like it's just genocidal. And I just thought that was like the ultimate level you could use to how male sex has affected history and the development of women of all of any other sexes that have tried to emerge, and trans people and pansexual people.
In a way, it's all about power and control. And yeah, so any other, I guess, thoughts about disability representation in Orphan Black?
I thought that Astor clones represented segregation of disability. They actually represented, like, what if you took a society of disabled people and you segregated them completely? And mind you, we're still providing them all the resources and things they need to live, to be educated, to function, but they're just completely segregated from the rest of society. Let's just do that. If you notice, their cure mentality went so awry. The leaders wanted a cure for the illness that killed them, but were also very acceptant of their identity as clones. But they still had, you know, we need a cure for what's killing us. But the pastors, once they got to the point where it was really killing them, they started getting to the point where we'll do anything we have to do to live, because they've been so segregated from able people, from regular society, that they have no value in their lives.
Well, and it was interesting that, like, their disability manifested much more as a mental health disability, meaning the casters versus the Leetas. The other instance of disability that I thought was really interesting is the one that we start off with in the beginning of the show, is Beth. As, you know, our first couple seasons roll on and we learn more and more about Beth and her substance abuse and her depression and anxiety.
A few seasons ago, but Rachel was disabled, which was injured. But we saw a lot about her recovery and, you know, the time period when she used a wheelchair and she started using a cane. But during that entire time, she, you know, maintained a pretty hot and sexual relationship with Ferdinand, her lover, Parker. And I thought that was especially nice to see, because you really don't see that in a lot of shows.
As a BDSM-friendly, like, disabled person, hell yeah. BDSM long-distance relationships are a thing, y'all. You be on the internet killing it, okay? What most people don't realize is BDSM relationships are actually much more emotionally involved and intense than vanilla relationships. Because of the level of trust it takes and vulnerability it takes to allow someone to put you in a situation where, for example, in the comic book, Rachel has Ferdinand trapped in a box for an undecided amount of time. Yeah. That is a level of trust that you just can't put anyone else in the world in charge of. That is why people are attracted to it. For Rachel and for Ferdinand, their relationship was so intense. That connection is so intense that you feel like, this is the only other person in the world who I can 100% trust with my life, my pain, with my suffering, with everything. They'll let me express that in this way, and I know they're not going to hurt me because of it. It really made me rethink my whole wardrobe and all of my accessibility accessories.
Oh God, yes.
I'm like, my God, where am I buying my canes? They're worthless. We need new ones. Where's one with a diamond head that's all white?
Yeah, I love that she didn't have the, what we lovingly refer to as the stripper cane, like the clear, lucite hospital
cane. Oh my God, she was like, fuck that cane. If it's not pearl white, I don't handle it.
Of course, Rachel would have like a scepter. And when she's on the island and she's in the crappy chair, like the hospital grade chair, that is actually wheelchair bound. She is actually bound to this chair because this is a crappy ass chair.
Well, also, she was in the basement.
And she's in the basement, and she looks up at the epically steep stairs. That should be just the meme of inaccessibility. Like, and then it should be like, hashtag California. Like, because that's the whole state. They're like, we're a beautiful, progressive, financially wealthy state that doesn't understand stairs and elevators. I just feel like that should be the meme that goes nationwide.
I think a lot about Kira and just, like, you know, she gave up so many of her parts of her body for science. I never forget the part where she gave up, did they remove part of her tooth? And, you know, Traceba was, you know, she felt horrible about asking for that, but, you know, she needed that genetic material to keep doing the research. What really scared me in season 5 was, you know, the plans that Rachel and Diane had get to harvest her eggs. You know, that is a huge invasion of a child and any woman. And this happens a lot. I mean, this happens to a lot of people where things are done to pit their bodies without their permission at all. And I think that really resonates with a lot of women and also disabled people.
I think women, I think people of color, I think disabled people. I mean, it's very Tuskegee. When I had my daughter, I'll never forget the anesthesiologist. I remember him saying to my OBGYN over my shoulder, okay, well, while we're down here, are we going to just tie your tubes? Me giving my OB the side eye, and my husband's like over the other shoulder being like, no. And my OB, who's a brilliant Black woman, looking at me and being like, I don't think that is on the agenda, and I don't think we need to talk about that. The idea of taking advantage of people when they are the most vulnerable. That's a key part of the medical industrial complex. I mean, Henrietta Lacks, you know.
I think that Kira and Charlotte were the only two characters that had a disability experience but weren't 100% cure-seeking. Kira knew that she couldn't fix her connection to all the clones. She simply wanted to understand it.
Yeah, and like when they all think that she's a cutter, I thought that was so fascinating. It's like they were so quick to jump in that there was something wrong with her versus that she was just trying to understand what was happening with her body and her brain.
Exactly. And I think that Charlotte is the same way. Charlotte does have the disability of the genetic defect of their genome. But at the same time, Charlotte doesn't give a fuck about her leg. She doesn't care about her physical, visible disability. She's like, I'm fine. When people bring it up, she's like, well, they could bring it up, I guess, but I don't care because I'm fine.
I think one of the most, you know, crushing moments was the season was when Rachel thought she was, you know, quote-unquote, liberated, and she sees in her medical record, she is still seen as a dumper.
Yeah.
And she was always going to be seen that way, and, you know, she tried so hard to fit in and to be empowered and to have control over her life. She did not want to be a clone at all, but she could never divorce herself from it.
Well, and I thought just the idea of compliance, like just how they got compliance out of the different clones, figuring out the different sorts of leverage that the patriarchy was using to enforce compliance. It's one of those things that I keep thinking about. It's like, the different ways that the medical industrial complex can get disabled people to jump through hoops.
Human gene editing is definitely on the horizon, as we've seen in the latest news about the testing of an embryo. So, you know, that's been a big part of the show Orphan Black, the issues of autonomy, and also the consequences of gene editing on our society.
I mean, I was actually really pleased to see them, like, handle it as thoughtfully as they did. And I think because we get to know the characters as women before we get to know them as clones, we're invested in them as characters and not as science plot points. When shows have really solid writing and are really character-centered, it allows people to gain a new perspective on an issue that previously they wouldn't have really paid any mind to.
I completely agree with that. As a Black person, I feel like when you were watching Family Matters, Cosby Show, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, In Living Color, did you think that this encompassed the entire Black experience? Like, did you no moments of this show were set up specifically to educate you on the Black experience? Like, did you not see those moments? Because we didn't need that. That wasn't for us. That was for you, so that you understand. I think the way Orphan Black handles eugenics What if Castor is used as a disabled form of using disability as eugenics? Or what if eugenics is used as an attack to stop people that we view as disabled because they're not equal to abled or normal people because they're clones or because they have a disability from birth or whatever? I think that both of those aspects are addressed in the show, yet the show is still entertaining. I feel the same thing about surveillance or forced treatment and bodily autonomy and bioethics and reproductive justice. Those are all issues that we're actively combating right now. So I appreciate that with these characters, they really made them people, but then they took these people and these fully developed characters and they explored our real issue, like forced treatment, like how they forced the babies onto Helena. And Helena decided, I want to have these children, but she also decided, I'm going to kill the person who impregnated me with them. You don't get to choose what my body does or doesn't do, and there are still consequences for that. No one ever said she's not going to be a sociopath anymore, but everyone said, we're going to support her and provide her the resources that she's going to need from society and from her family in order to succeed as a mother.
Yeah, and I think that this is another idea that, you know, choice is still a privilege. It's something that people really have to work fucking hard just to have the right to have a choice.
And people will hunt you down to try to take that choice away.
Yeah. What I got a lot out of it was, number one, science does not exist in a vacuum. Now, you know, there's always going to be morality. There's always going to be corruption. There's always going to be mistakes. But, you know, you think a lot about, you know, capitalism, and about corruption, and about the real ability to really, you know, take these, you know, technologies and really, you know, profit from them. And when you profit from them, you really are going to be exploiting people and also creating greater inequality. So that, to me, was one of the big kind of takeaways, that there's always going to be these market forces that are always looking to profit from the bodies and lives of the people without power.
Yeah.
I think that I would be remiss as a medical marijuana patient to not mention that I really love seeing Lucas smoke Delphine out.
Yes.
There's always this thing you discuss when you date someone who never smoked. You're like, there's a bond that we've never quite made. And I feel like that day was the day when she told her, like, exactly how she needed her to take her connection with her and her sister serious. And also, it was when the show, like, kind of made it so that that was going to be a part of Cosima's identity no matter what, because, like, she's going to need it more and more from there out. Never took away from her intelligence or her productivity, and she's still a genius-ass woman who's, like, kicking ass and, making discoveries that are changing your life.
I think it's also huge that the love story was not Sarah's. In most shows, the love story would be with your main character or with the character that you enter the show with.
The main couple in the show is Cosima.
Yeah.
Cosima, like Cosima and Delphine, is the relationship that everyone is like, we're not going to get through if they don't get through it too, you guys.
Yeah.
The show did not fall into the trap of having, you know, queer love stories and a horrific death.
I'm not going to lie. I was a serious Willow and Tara fan. R.I.P. Tara. And, you know, that leaves you with a hole in your heart. So I'm very happy to see that I don't have to do that with Colfine, because Colfine forever.
Yeah. I want to ask you both, that this is hard because, you know, there's so much, there's 5 years to choose from. But if you had to pick one scene or moment that you loved for the entire series, What would it be?
I did consider when Donnie and Allison did their money dance. I settled on the Clone Club dance party.
Yeah.
As someone who has been sick for so long, but I do, to be honest, like, sometimes I don't give them enough shout-outs because I'm always, like, praising all of my crit friends and all of my disability fam. But my able friends who are here for me whenever I need them, sometimes when I just need to turn up and dance with them and just let go of everything, like, I feel like totally Cosima in that scene, where you just take your oxygen mask and you just go in the dance party, and you know you're going to be a little out of breath afterwards, but you get to, for a few minutes, just escape necessarily what's happening to your body and embrace all the good people around you and all the good things about your life that are still worth sticking around for despite what's happening to your body.
How about you, Becca?
Oh, God, there are so many. The Hendrix money dance is definitely up there. Something that really touched me was watching Art walk in with Charlotte on the finale. With Charlotte and Maya. And the knowledge that, like, Charlotte's been living with him. It's the intentionality and the power of intentional love. He has taken this child into his home.
Yeah, and I think in a way it's his way of continuing his relationships with all the sisters, but also honoring what he had with Beth.
Yeah, it is active, tangible, intentional, choosing family. And I think just seeing all their families together in the backyard, for me, was really touching. We finally have the Hendrix kids home. You got Charlotte, you got Maya, you got the babies. You realize, like, there are no secrets at that point.
Yeah. I was really nerve-wracked by the end of the season because I thought they could be very cruel and, they had so many dangers. And yet, they did have a happy ending, and it wasn't done in a cheap way. Every bit of those happy moments were earned. It's such a gift for us as the fans, and I think was at the end of season 3, you see all the sisters gather at Alice's house for dinner. That was also a very special moment where, again, it's like the dance party, it's like the finale of the season where they just enjoy their time together. And they're taking a moment from fighting evil, but they're really sharing their love. I really want to thank you both for sharing your time with me. For people who want to find you online, how can people reach you or hit you up?
You can find me on Twitter at Rebecca Coakley, and I'm on Medium. Medium is where I'm doing most of my posting nowadays.
You can find me on Twitter at MAE for May _ DAY for day.
Well, thank you so much, both of you. You two are definitely, I think, sisters very dear to my heart. And I'm very thankful that you guys were able to share this with me.
Oh, thank you, Alice. We love you.
I love getting dirty with my disabled friends, especially about pop culture and media. If you're curious about Over Black, you can find out more at bbcamerica.com/shows/orphan-black. This podcast is a production of the Disability Visibility Project and online community dedicated to creating, sharing, and amplifying disability media and culture. All episodes, including text transcripts, are available at disabilityvisibilityproject.com/podcast. The audio producer for this episode is Cheryl Green. Introduction by Latif McLeod. Theme music by Realtor Sports Camp. If this episode gives you life, you can do two things. One, subscribe to the Disability Visibility Podcast on iTunes. And number two, support the work of creating disabled media at our Patreon page at patreon.com/DVP. That's patreon.com/DVP. Thanks for listening, and see you on the internet.
No matter where I go, all eyes on me. Everyone, stop what you're doing. The human's moving. Ooh, and I breathe. One of many thousands.